A battle over First Amendment freedoms is being waged in San Francisco. Let's lay that out now. On July 3rd, transit police shot and killed a homeless man. They say lunged at them with a knife in a train station. Protests followed. Then last month, officials from BART, or the Bay Area Rapid Transit, cut cell phone service to some stations to try to stop a planned flash mob protest they said was going to interrupt service. That caused more protests, so the cell phone shut down. Then on September 8th, the transit police handcuffed and detained some journalists they said were interfering with their handling of a protest. All this comes as other cities try to figure out how to handle flash mobs, not the fun kind that show up and have pillow fights, but the when people alerted by social media and cell phones to, say, show up and rob stores in cities such as Philadelphia, or those mobs that trash neighborhoods in London. Critics say BART has now violated 4 of 5 freedoms in the First Amendment: speech, assembly, petition, and free press. Now, San Francisco is already changing its policies, but the summer-long fracas has raised a lot of questions. Marvin Amori is a First Amendment legal specialist who blogs about free speech and technology, also a legal scholar with the New America Foundation. He joins us now. Marvin, welcome.
Thank you, Robin. It's great to be on.
And we understand the FCC is reviewing whether BART broke the law in shutting down this cell phone service. And they did so, again, after seeing details of a proposed protest on an organizer's website. But they own the system they shut down, correct? I mean, how is much is that a factor?
So under the law, under federal law, even companies that own a telephone network can't shut off the telephone network without notifying the FCC first. And that makes sense, because otherwise you could have city officials in any city shutting off networks. You could have any telephone company shutting off networks. And so we need a sort of centralized process to make sure that, you know, the phone system works.
Well, we should say that BART officials are reviewing their policy. They're now proposing that they only shut down cell service in drastic situations like a bomb threat. And we understood that post 9/11, that cities and towns had the right and, you know, had some plans to do that, to shut off cell service for fears of, for instance, a terrorist who might operate a bomb by using a cell phone.
Yeah, I mean, there are circumstances under which it would make sense to shut off a phone network if you had the right processes in place and the right authorities making the decision. What BART did in this circumstance sounds like there was no real planning or notification of the federal authorities that you would expect to be part of this decision. And in terms of the legality, there's two different arguments being made. One argument is that BART violated the federal law that requires keeping the phone service open generally. And the other is that BART violated the First Amendment of the Constitution, which protects freedom of speech. And so if BART manages to abide by FCC and federal laws the next time it shuts off a phone network during an emergency, it's possible BART would still violate the federal Constitution, which requires freedom of speech.
Well, they cite a 1969 court case that concluded that speech is not protected when it's directed to incite or produce imminent lawless action. This was a case that involved a member of the KKK calling for a rally. But, you know, what do you think about that? BART's claim that they can stop speech because it would protect lives. It would be to stop what they saw as the inciting of lawless action.
Translating the First Amendment from decisions from the 1940s involving leaflets, from the 1960s involving the KKK, it's actually difficult to translate those cases over, but we have some abiding principles. And the abiding principle is, during times of extreme emergency with imminent lawlessness to be expected, those are moments where government can silence speech in advance. They can silence someone who's speaking on a street corner. They can silence somebody who's handing out leaflets under very, very narrow circumstances. And as a general rule, governments will claim that they need to silence speech for public safety, right? There has to be a limit to that claim, because governments all over the world will claim that, you know, speech will lead to violence. And so what the Supreme Court did in 1969, in the very case that BART cites, Brandenburg v. Ohio, this Supreme Court in the U.S. said silencing speech can only happen under very, very limited circumstances, where there's a speaker inciting imminent lawlessness. And that standard probably wasn't met with BART. And it's only courts, really, that'll have the final say on the First Amendment question. Mm-hmm. It's courts and sort of the public opinion around what we do going forward, what policies BART will adopt, what policies other cities will adopt to ensure freedom of speech, even when there might be the threat of a protest.
Do we know if this is going to court?
It seems like this might not go to court because of the strong public reaction that BART has faced and the willingness of BART to speak with civil liberties groups and to refine their policies. I can expect that if BART or some other agency does something like this again, that there would be a court case.
Meanwhile, you mentioned, you know, how governments can do this, and of course they have. We think of Egypt shutting down the internet before Hosni Mubarak's government fell. And so there's something, if you take away the talk about legality and constitutional rights, there's something just plain oogie about it. And
exactly.
Right. A member of BART's board of directors says she's shocked that BART didn't think about the implications of shutting down a cell network. Is this the first time a U.S. government agency has shut down a mobile phone network because of a protest against the government agency?
This is the first time that I know of, and in the last months after this incident, I haven't heard of another incident like it before or after the incident.
So as we said, San Francisco is reconsidering policies, but isn't there a tough problem here? You know, police do have concerns about flash mobs. We know that flash mobs have led to violence and robberies in places like Philadelphia and London. BART police have said, you know, they thought protesters were going to tie themselves to trains. It does seem that this cell phone social media thing is a new Pandora's box for police.
Yes. So these questions are both new and old. I mean, this was a protest based on violence that happened on the BART between police officers and people over the years. So this, the question of a protest against government agency is an old question. And the question of whether or not governments can silence speech at that protest is also an old question, whether or not the technology is, you know, cell phone networks or leaflets. And so in some ways, it's an old question. It's also new and different because you have these new challenges of flash mobs that lead to robberies. But what we have to do is we have to separate the actual crime from the speech. But there's a lot of things that are illegal that you can still actually advocate for. For example, like it's illegal to smoke pot, but it's totally legal to stand on a street corner and advocate that marijuana should be legal.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to separate the speech, which is often people trying to gather other people to organize, versus the actual criminal activity, which is, you know, robbing a grocery store. What police officers should do to make sure that we have breathing space for our free speech protections is to, you know, engage in regular police activities, such as capturing people who rob buildings, have police officers who are present in neighborhoods to make them safer. There's no need to silence speech or silence protests simply to make sure that criminal activity doesn't happen down the line.
Well, then there's a second part of the BART story, which is the coverage of the protests. As we said, BART officials recently detained several journalists at a protest. They said they were sort of interfering, and now BART's considering setting up maybe a police line to designate areas for the media, or having police issue an order for reporters to step aside when officers start to move in to control a crowd. This is interesting, too. Is this new?
In some ways, this is new. But again, the tension between journalists getting a story at a protest and police officers trying to maintain order, that's very old as well. So what we've seen over the last several years is an increasing amount of zoning for speech. So if you remember free speech zones, which became popular over the last decade.
Sure, at the Republican and Democratic conventions.
Yes, both parties and political candidates are now engaged in zoning places where people can speak. We call them free speech zones. And, you know, in theory, the entire country, the entire nation of the United States should be a free speech zone. Right? But you have to manage some sort of balance between safety and speech, and making that balance isn't easy. If I were weighing the balance between safety and free speech, I might draw the line differently and advocate for greater free speech zones, areas of speech that are closer to where the protest is, closer to the intended audience of the communication.
But are you saying also there should be reporting zones to report on the free speech zones?
Wow. So I haven't heard of reporting zones yet. That actually does sound new. And it points to the slippery slope problem. Once you start zoning speakers into free speech zones that are away from their audiences, how far does that go? Right. First, you begin with zoning speakers and protesters. Then you move to zoning the reporters who are commenting on those protesters. And it just can go down the line from there, where in the end, people who are protesting or covering protests are far away from their intended audience.
Well, as they were at the conventions. Well, we'll have to see what they do there.
Exactly. At the convention, the intended audience was political delegates, people who actually were going to cast votes or were in Washington, D.C., who are political figures, and those people from Washington, D.C., were able to walk into the convention, hardly seeing a lot of the protests that were happening farther away.
But again, though, just the flip side of that, Marvin Amori, do you have some sympathy for police maybe trying to do their job, and there's a bunch of us journalists, in their way?
Yes, I have a lot of sympathy for the police trying to navigate these new questions. Right? I mean, their focus is on maintaining order while also respecting the rights of citizens they're protecting. So it's not an easy question, and being a police officer is definitely a stressful job that requires them being alert at all times. But the important point is that this public dialogue that's happening will help shape what police officers do. And to the extent that they hear from other voices and from protesters and other advocates, I think it'll actually shape what police agencies end up doing in the end. Right? I don't think that police officers want to make the wrong decision. I just think without public debate informing their decisions, they're more likely to lead to decisions that don't respect everyone's speech rights the way the Constitution would mandate.
Marvin Amori, First Amendment legal specialist who blogs about free speech and technology and is also a legal scholar with the New America Foundation. Marvin, thanks.
Thank you, Robin.